Proverbs 10, I'm going to start in verse 1, read down to verse 7. You follow along? I shall read out loud. The Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame. Blessings are upon the head of the just, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. And we come to Proverbs 10, and moving forward, there is a little bit of change in how these chapters are organized. The book of Proverbs is a unique book in and of itself, and within the book of Proverbs, there's some change the way the Proverbs are presented to us. There are several different ways Proverbs are presented, and it changes a little bit here in chapter 10 going forward. And what you find is, prior to this, maybe not perfectly, but maybe more so, you had a similar teaching more lumped together in several verses. But in Proverbs 10, it's not that way. Proverbs 10 is more like if you took a deck of cards, you know, a deck of cards has four suits, hearts, diamonds, clubs, and spades, with 13 in each suit, so you have 52 cards. And if each suit was separate, if you had four stacks, a stack of the hearts, stack of the diamonds, stack of the clubs, stack of the spades, it'd be easy to look at them, see if there's 13 of them, boom, okay, they're all here, and we know we have them all. But that's not how I usually use it. Look at a deck of cards, they're all shuffled together, and when you look at them, you say, well, I don't know, they look like they're all here, but they're all mixed together, and it's hard to tell the difference. That's how it is kind of in Proverbs 10. There's a lot of things all, it's almost like the verses are shuffled together, and you gotta take a little bit of time and try to separate them and see what is the main teachings that are going throughout chapter 10. So as I study chapter 10, as I look at it, it seems to me, this is at least my understanding, from my study, Proverbs 10, the common teaching is how wisdom can bring about true success. And that's why we're calling this chapter, Proverbs chapter 10, wisdom and success. Now, as we think about bringing success in someone's life, there's kind of a two-sided coin here. We don't want to discourage a desire to succeed. Sometimes I think it comes across that way when we preach against living for money or living for the things of the world. It's almost, people feel like, well, then I guess I should have a cardboard box over on the bridge and never do anything. Well, we're not trying to convey that. That's not what we're trying to say. And so we don't want to discourage a desire to succeed. You know, America is a great country. Did you know that? It is a great country. Maybe not everyone realizes that or everyone thinks that, but I look at America compared to the rest of the world, and, I'll say a few things. Number one, I don't care what the rest of the world thinks about America. They're just jealous. That's how I look at it. Everyone wants to be in America. How do I know that? Just go to the border and watch them rush across. And so America, I think, is head and shoulders above all the countries. And I think one of the reasons is because there is a more opportunity to succeed. We have more freedom than most countries. We have, I think, even our culture is changing, but still has a culture that's biblical based in many ways, and it promotes freedom, promotes ingenuity, promotes success in that way. And I think it's good that is true. And so we don't want to discourage a desire to succeed, because by doing that, it's almost like we're promoting laziness, promoting a complacency. And we're not trying to do that. So we don't want to discourage a desire to succeed. But on the flip side, we don't want to wrongly encourage a desire to succeed apart from God or in any way, you know, whatever it takes to get ahead, you know, dog-eat-dog world kind of a thinking. So we don't want to wrongly encourage a desire to succeed, because that promotes carnality. So we want people to succeed, but we want people to succeed in a way that honors the Lord. And so that's when we think of success, that's how we're looking at it. So the lessons we look at tonight, these four lessons, the idea is to get wisdom so that we properly seek success in a way that lifts up the Lord and honors the Lord and promotes biblical things and not simply gets us ahead of everyone else. So there's four big lessons we're going to give you here from chapter 10. Number one lesson is this. Wisdom teaches us, this is important, that not all success satisfies. That's important. When you think about success, just because you succeed at something doesn't mean you're going to be satisfied with it. Doesn't mean at the end of the day you're going to say, boy, look what I did. There's some people at the end of the day succeed greatly, but they're still miserable. You know, some of the people who succeed in many ways, whether you're thinking of like a Hollywood fame or even in wealthy ways, in their life by suicide because they're so discouraged, so disgruntled with life. This is, I don't know, this hasn't been in the paper for a long time. This is about maybe early 2000, something like that. But I like that when they had the internet really came on, they called it the something boom. Dot-com boom, and people were making money. You know, they'd start these websites, and everyone would want a piece of the action. And these people were becoming millionaires overnight for really doing nothing but creating a website. And they had what they called, what was it called? These people who were making these millions by just creating websites were actually going to psychologists or psychiatrists for mental health because they were so discouraged, so depressed because they felt like they were rich without doing any work and that their success did not satisfy them. Now, I had an answer. No one liked my answer. My answer was this: if you don't like your money, send it this way. You won't be burdened by it and we'll take care of it for you. It didn't work out that way, though. So anyways, wisdom teaches that not all success satisfies. Let's go back to chapter 10 and see if we can draw some verses along this way. Look at verse 2. Treasures of wickedness, that would be at least financial success. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. Look at verse 3. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. Go down to verse 22. The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. Look at verse 24. The fear of the wicked, and we'll come back to this idea about the fear of the wicked. The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous shall be granted. And then look at one more verse, verse 28. The hope of the righteous shall be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked shall perish. So we have this idea that wisdom teaches that not all success satisfies. So the great blessing is this, is to succeed by God's help and then enjoy that success. In other words, we want to succeed with the Lord's help, but at the end of the day, we want to be able to enjoy what the Lord has given us. We want to enjoy whether it's financial success or our family or maybe some things that we've been able to accumulate, maybe some possessions that the Lord has brought our way, or maybe a business or whatever it is, maybe even think about ministry, whatever it is, at the end of the day, we want to be able to enjoy those things. That's why it's important that we seek success, if I can get that word out there, that comes from the Lord. So here's what I'm trying to get across. I know you haven't got anything to write down yet, but we will eventually. Here's what I'm trying to get across. Don't seek just to succeed, because at the end of the day, you're not going to be happy anyways. Seek the success that comes from the Lord, because that's the success that satisfies. Now, I know what you're thinking, but I think I could be happy. If I had $1 million, I think I'd find a way to be happy. Let me give you a story here. This is, as far as I know, a very true story. How many of you have heard of a man by the name of John Rockefeller? John D. Rockefeller. He's buried right over here in Cleveland. Very wealthy person. He was at one time the richest man in the world, and he was the first American billionaire. A reporter asked Mr. Rockefeller, how much money is enough? That's a good question, right? How much money is enough? The guy has the most money in the entire world. How much money is enough? Here's his answer. Just a little bit more. Because if your success, if your satisfaction, if everything's based on money, you'll never have enough. Apart from the Lord, it will never satisfy. So let me give you a couple of things to write down. The danger in success is when one seeks to succeed apart from God. Doesn't matter. It doesn't mean you won't succeed. You may make millions. You may be famous. You may build a great business. But the danger is you still won't have the joy that could come from success because you're doing it apart from God. When success is about money, possessions, or fame, then we'll never have enough to be satisfied. It looks like I didn't show you the word that was underlined, but I figure the word that is missing there, you'll figure it out. It's worth satisfied. Now, notice this as well. Because now, let me show you a little bit more addition, because I told you we'd talk about that word fear. Not only are you not content or joyous with that, but there's actually a negative part to it. Why is it that people who have all this money, why aren't they happy? One of the reasons they're unhappy is this. They're always living in fear. If the Lord didn't give it to you, and you didn't do it the right way, what's the fear? That either you're going to get caught and found out and you end up in prison,
like Enron or something, you're going to find out you're cheating the system and it's all going to be taken away. Or, since you cheated someone else or knocked down someone else or pushed down others, someone else will come and push you down. And so if success is all about you, then you're afraid the next person will come and do the same thing, cheat you, rob you, do you wrong. And so it becomes a fear that builds in when we're not doing it the Lord's way. So in addition, not only is it not satisfying, but in addition, without the Lord, we are fearful then about losing those things. Now, let me have you turn with me to the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. And look with me at verse number 9. Moreover, the profit of the earth is for all. The king himself is served by the field. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. That's exactly what we're talking about. Now look at verse 11. 5:11. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving beholding them with their eyes? In other words, the more you get, the more it ends up going out some other way. You lose it somehow, so at least that's the fear of it. And so therefore, you're not enjoying it because of that fear that comes in. So let me give you one more thought before we get to these questions here in a moment. If we know the Lord is behind our success, now here is, if we do it the Lord's way, if you do it as you should, you're being right, you're being honest, you're being hardworking, you're doing, it may take you longer, it may not make you as successful as some other people. You say, well, look at them, they're gaming the system, they're cheating the system, and they're getting further ahead, and that may be, but what you're not getting is you're not getting their fears, and what you are getting is a greater satisfaction because you're doing it the right way. So we know the Lord is behind our success. Now watch this. Then we can trust Him even when that success is taken away. Now think about that. If our hope and confidence is in the Lord regardless, then what happens when we lose all those things? Okay, so now you're doing well at work, you're getting promoted, you're making big bucks, and all of a sudden you're thinking, man, look at this. I got a house, I got a car, I got this, we're going to go on vacation. We're high flying. You know, maybe you got a, like this high paying job. Let's say you work at Myers Tires or something. Because we know they all pay great there. So, you worked hard and finally you got to that point. Now you're high flying at Myers Tires. And then all of a sudden Myers Tires decides to shut down and go to China. Never know. You never know what might happen. And all of a sudden, now that job is gone. Now, if you knew the Lord was your provider, then you say, well, the Lord gave and the Lord can give again. But if that's not your confidence, what happens? All of a sudden you're wringing your hands, you're pulling out your hair, you're fretting, because your confidence was never the Lord to start with. And so when the success is based on the Lord, when those things are taken away, then we can still rejoice in the Lord. Now let me ask you, before we go to the place, where would we go to in the Bible to find a good example of someone who greatly succeeded, lost it all, but still had joy? Job, thank you. Let's go to Job chapter 1. Sometimes I'm up here and people are like, yeah, that's just what you think. Well, I do think that, but I think that because there's some scriptural basis that supports that. So Job chapter 1, look with me at verse number 20. Then Job arose. This is after he lost everything but his health. His health is going to be in the next chapter, but he's lost all of his riches. He lost all of his kids. Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down. That's all signs of remorse and grief. That's all that, that's what that means. And fell down upon the ground and worshipped and said, now that's interesting because all the things leading up to it, it sounds like he's going to fall down upon the ground and cry and weep and pour out his tears, but he doesn't. He does all the things that looks like he's about to grieve, but at the end of 20, he's worshiping and said, naked came out of my mother's womb and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job sinned not nor charged God foolishly. So it's important that we succeed, but we succeed the Lord's way. So at the end of the day, we can trust Him, not only be satisfied in that success, but trust Him because it may be that it might all be gone someday and we still want to trust Him. That brings us back to Proverbs 10. Let's look at those verses again just for a moment. Verse 2. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but He casteth away the substance of the wicked. And so our confidence is in the Lord. So wisdom teaches that not all success satisfies. So we want the success that comes from the Lord because it satisfies at the moment, and even if that success seemingly is taken away. So the question is, and that's why we ask you this here, this little lesson within a lesson, how do we know if we're seeking true success that comes that honors the Lord? Because the truth is, we always think we're right, no matter what. I mean, you've probably seen classic situations. One of the ones I think about there's a headline, this lady, she had just killed her husband, she's cradling him in his arms, you see the gun there, you see the guy, she's cradling him in the head, and it's quoting her what she's saying. She's saying, I loved you, I loved you, I loved you. And you're thinking, that kind of love kind of hurts. But, you're thinking, I don't really think you loved him, you just killed the guy. And so we can all, in our own hearts, think we're right. We can always justify what we're doing. That's just our human way of doing things. We can always do that. So how can we look into our heart beyond what we feel or think and ask ourselves, am I really seeking success that honors God, success that comes from the Lord, success that would be in a way that's pleasing to Him? Well, there's three questions I think we can ask ourselves based on Proverbs 10. Here's question number one. Who do you want to honor by your success? You or others? Who's the focus? If it's all about you, that's probably not a good direction you're going. Now, how do I know that? Well, let's go back to chapter 10, look at verse 1. A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Notice the focus is not just on the son, but is on the person that they're honoring or not honoring by their behavior. Go down with me, if you will, to verse 5. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causes shame. Again, it's reflecting on the parents that way. So the idea is, who do we want to honor by our success? Or is it just about us? Or am I thinking, well, my goal is not just for me to be famous, for me to be rich, but I'm doing some things, or either trying to honor the Lord, or maybe my parents, or take care of my family, whatever it may be. So that's a good question, number one. Who do you want to honor by that success? Here's a second question to ask ourselves. Does your success define you or your faith in God? And that's not a well-written question, but I did it to write it succinctly. But mainly, here's what the question means. What defines you? Your success or your faith? At the end of the day, who are you? Are you the accumulation of what you have accomplished in this life? Are you that car is out in your parking lot? Is that who you are? Are you that house you live in? Is that who you are? Are you the clothes you wear? I mean, what defines who you are? The what you can afford to buy? Where you can afford to eat at? Or is it, here's what defines me. Here who I am in Christ. Here's what I'm doing for Christ. Here's what I believe about Christ. Here's how I serve Christ. So what becomes that definition of our lives? What is our success? Is it us or is it our faith? Now, why do I say that? Look at verse 9. He that walketh uprightly walketh surely. But he that perverteth his ways shall be known. Go down to verse 29. The way of the Lord is strength to the upright, but destruction shall be to the workers of iniquity. So what defines you? You or your faith? Let me ask you one more question. So who do you want to honor? What defines you? Now here's a question to ask yourself. If we're really seeking true success that honors God, number three is this. How much wrong are you willing to do to succeed? See, no. The question is, are you willing to do wrong? No. How much wrong? Because we can talk ourselves. Because we say, well, no, I would never kill anyone. But would you cheat someone out of maybe a dollar or two? Well, how much wrong are you willing to do to succeed? Now, obviously, the answer should be zero. That's a good question to ask ourselves. How much am I willing to waver on some things? How much am I willing to cross into a gray area? How much wrong are you willing to do to succeed? Go back to chapter 10, look at verse 10 again. Now watch this. He that winketh with the eye causes sorrow. People kind of, we just kind of wink at that stuff. Yeah? It's only a little bit of wrong. That's why you're winking at it. Go to look at verse 23. It is as sport to a fool to do mischief, fun and games. But a man of understanding hath wisdom. So that's a good question, I think. I think those are three good questions to ask ourselves. Who are we seeking to honor? What really defines us? Because if our possessions define us, then we're going to probably be seeking honor or success in a way that doesn't honor Him, because we're just looking for things. And how much wrong are we willing to do to succeed? So number one, wisdom teaches that not all success satisfies. That's the first great lesson. Here's the second lesson about wisdom success. And that number two is this. Wisdom knows that success often requires hard work. And I use the word often because I suppose if you're Bill Gates' son and you inherit billions of dollars, it may not have been hard work except going through being born, I guess. Most of the time when we think about life, other than great exceptions like that, hard work is what predicates success. Chapter 10, look at verse 4. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. You saw this verse, verse 5. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame. Both talking about the work ethic there. Drop down to verse 15. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. The labor of the righteous tendeth to life. The fruit of the wicked to sin. So all that has a connotation, at least, of work or of effort there. Now, think about this statement. Unless poverty is a result of living for God, and sometimes that's true. Sometimes if you live for God, you might end up in poverty. It's probably not as true in America today, but it is true in some places. Brother Mailey, when he was preaching Sunday night, he talked about in the book of Acts that happened. Because they lived for Jesus, they lost their house, they lost their job, they lost their family. They were basically homeless and penniless because of their faith. Well, if that's the case, then your poverty would be a good thing. That's an honor. You're suffering for Christ, so that would be a blessing. So that's a little bit different. So I'm not in any way insulting someone who's suffering for Christ and therefore may look like that they're in poverty, not because they're lazy or anything, but it just happens to be that way. Okay? So unless poverty is a result of living for God, there is no honor in being poor. There's no great honor of saying, well, I got a box under a bridge. But is that because you're what? Drinking, doing drugs, and won't hold down a job? There's no honor in being poor if your poverty is caused by your own lack of diligence or some sinful living that's going on in your life. So there's no honor in being poor that way. And we don't want to promote the idea that if you have nothing, then somehow you're more spiritual. Now, again, we're putting aside the idea that you're living for Jesus and that's the result of it. Other than that, being poor, there is no honor in that. Now, the truth is this, God can bless us apart from any effort. God can do anything He wants in our lives, and sometimes He does. Sometimes we're just laboring away, and apart from our labors, God sends us a special blessing. Somehow, something happens and comes in our life, and something we weren't expecting. And so God can bless us apart from any effort. That is a true statement, and it does happen, but it's usually not the often thing that happens, but it does happen. But the often thing is this, He blesses us through our efforts to succeed. Typically, the blessing comes from some area you're laboring in. If you're sitting at home saying, Lord, we need money to pay this bill, but you're not even looking for work, you're not doing anything to get that money, you're doing exactly zero, you might not get the blessing. Now, the blessing may come in a different way, but at least if you're putting the effort in, the Lord may say, hey, at least they're doing their part, they're trying, and then the Lord pours out a blessing. And so, typically, God's blessing comes through our efforts, or along with those efforts. So let me just make a couple statements about this. Those who are unwilling to work hard are also unwittingly foregoing God's blessings. God blesses hard work. Go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, to what he talked about Adam going forward. So now you're talking about Genesis 3, early in the Bible, all the way. God blesses hard work. He created us to be laborers. Now, I'm not in any way trying to be mean to someone who is somehow disabled or not able in some way to perform up to the level that others. Okay, obviously we're not trying to discredit anyone. We're not trying to disrespect anyone. We're not trying to criticize anyone. What we're talking about is those who can, who don't. And we sometimes, as a nation, as a society, we show pity and sympathy on those in a way to those that is not helping them. is actually hurting them. There's a book I read some years ago. It was a great book. It really opened my eyes about this. And talked about the tragedy of American compassion. We're such a compassionate country that we're actually hurting people, not helping them. And so we need to understand this. When you're unwilling to work, you're unwittingly forgoing many of these blessings. We as people, as human beings, should never be afraid of hard work. Now, it's not wrong to find an easier way to get the job done. You don't have to do it hard just to say, okay, here's the easy way, but here's the hard way. I'm going to do it the hard way because that honors God. We're not talking about it. Okay, if there's an easier way, then fine, you can do it an easier way. So we're not saying it has to be the hard way. What we're saying is this, it's wrong not to do any job, not to do anything, simply because it's too hard. Well, you know, I've heard people tell me these things over the years. They say, well, you know, I can't hold down a job. Well, why can't you hold down a job? Well, you know, I have to get up every day and go to work. Well, you might have to do that. You're right. But I can't do that. Now, again, we're not talking about those who have physical conditions that prohibit that, okay? I'm not in any way trying to be mean to them. I'm talking about people who could do it, who just are too lazy to do it. Okay, that's not right. It's not right in to encourage them in that. Now watch this. Listen to the statement. Laziness is not rewarded by God and should not be by man. If you're disabled, and there's a lot of people who are this way, they just not their fault. Something has happened in their life and they're disabled. And many of those people would love to have the opportunity and the ability to do those things, but they can't. Okay, I understand. I'm not in any way criticizing them. What I'm talking about, people who they have all the health that I have, they have all the ability that I have, but with no desire to do anything. They just want to lay around and have everyone else pay their bills for them. Now, the Lord does not reward that. It's a shame our country does. It should not be that way. And here's what people say, well, they wouldn't eat. You're right, they wouldn't. You know eventually what happened? They'd get hungry. You know what eventually would happen? They'd get a job. Probably doing something they wouldn't want to do. But at least they'd have a job and they'd be a productive member of society. Now, probably the most famous verse is 2 Thessalonians. Let's go there. Again, I'm not trying to be unkind. The unkindness is promoting laziness. That's the unkindness. That's the mistake we make. We think this, but we're look at them. If we don't give this family a welfare check, their children will go hungry. Their children. But what have we found over the years? That it comes a big cycle. And when we promote laziness in the parents, it promotes laziness in the kids, and promote laziness in their kids, and it becomes almost a dependency mentality, and that's not what we need in our nation. God blesses hard work, and that needs to be what we promote as believers, because this is what the Lord promotes. It's not an American value, it's a biblical value. 2 Thessalonians, chapter 3, look at verse 10. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any man would not work, the government should send him a check each... No, it doesn't say that, does it? That if any man would not work, neither should he eat. Now, I began with my lesson on my... because I love America, and if I was from a different country, I'd probably say it about that country. But I'm from America, I love America, I think America is the greatest country in the world. But I think one of the reasons that God has blessed us is because we are built on this idea of hard work and opportunity. Our history is filled with people who started way out here, the pilgrims from the Mayflower, who, and not them personally, but eventually they kept going out, and then they got to the Alleghenies and they kind of stopped for a while, and then they figured, hey, there's probably land on the other side of the Alleghenies. And you had Daniel Boone and the Cumberland Gap and all of that, and it began. And then eventually you had the Oregon Trail, and they're going all the way out to the West Coast. And then they started Amazon and started sending stuff back to the Mayflower, to the Pilgrims. And so yeah, I'm going all the way out to the West Coast. A little change of history there. But anyways, because the idea was this: they wanted to succeed, they wanted to grow, they wanted the challenge and the opportunities. And that's what the Lord has blessed. Let's go back to Proverbs. Look with me in chapter 20. So this is a part of wisdom, knowing this, that success is built on hard work. Proverbs 20, look with me at verse 4. The sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore shall he beg and harvest and have nothing. Look at chapter 21. Look at verse 25. Now, there's a lot of verses. We'll just hit a couple just to give you the flavor of it. The desire of the slothful killeth him. Why? For his hands refuse to labor. He has the desire, doesn't have the character, and it comes back and bites him, hurts him. And that's what the Bible is teaching here. So we know this by wisdom, that success often requires hard work. So the first two things we've looked at is this. If we want to have success that satisfies, it needs to come from the Lord. That way, if something happens to that success, we still have faith and not fearful of those things. Number two, it's going to have an attitude of hard work. We can't simply around and say this, oh boy, I hope I'm successful someday. Boy, I hope I get successful. Just hope it comes and knocks on my door. And that's not wisdom. Wisdom says, okay, Lord, I want to be successful. Let's do something today to make it happen. Let's push that little bit forward. Let's see how the Lord can bless. That's the second thing. Then there's a third lesson we see in Proverbs 10 about success and about wisdom. And that is this, number three. Wisdom realizes, now watch this, that true success, this success that comes from the Lord, can outlive us. That's really what we're seeking for, something bigger than us. It can outlive us. Now, I guess in some ways, even worldly success would outlive us. I mean, we still have Standard Oil. It's not, I think BP bought them out now. But I mean, there's Rockefellers are still around. They still have a lot of money and a lot of clout. And so there is an idea that even people who aren't living right can have success that outlives them. But we're talking about in a way that honors the Lord, that goes beyond just our lifespan. This true success can outlive us, not only in a carnal way or worldly way or a secular way, that's what I'm saying, a secular way, but also in a spiritual way, because it can honor the Lord beyond our own lives. Let me show you a couple of verses and I'll try to build. And this is the longest point, if you notice from your worksheet. Proverbs 10, look with me in verse 7. Because there's a lot taught in chapter 10 about this. Verse 7, the memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. Look down at verse 25. As the whirlwind passeth, so is the wicked no more, but the righteous is an everlasting foundation. Verse 27, the fear of the Lord prolongeth days, but the years of the wicked shall be shortened. Verse 30, the righteous shall never be removed, but the wicked shall not inhabit the earth. So the idea of things lasting longer or outliving us. Now, before I give you any points, let me say this. When we talk about lasting longer in us, we mean in a positive way. Let me give you a name. This name has outlived this person's life. Adolf Hitler. His name has outlived his life, but not in a positive way. So we're talking about in a positive way, things outliving us. So if true success, think about this, if true success can outlive us, then we should seek to succeed at those things then that outlive us. So if the success the Lord wants to give goes beyond our lifetime, then we should be looking in our lifetime that things go beyond our lifetime, because that would be part of the success the Lord gives, if you follow my train of thinking. So what kind of things we're talking about? Well, I'll give you just several just to maybe get your own thinking going. One is this, we should seek to succeed at having a good testimony. Your name can live beyond your life in a positive way. For those of us who went to Hiles Anderson, especially in the 80s, because those were the golden years, as we all know. If you don't believe me, ask anyone who was there in the 80s, right? So anyways, for us at Hiles Anderson in the 80s, Brother Hiles had a great name, but that name still continues today. Still talked about. You know, Cole Maley comes up and mentions sermons that, and of course, Cole Maley was, eight years old when Brother Hiles passed, probably. But yet he talks about these sermons, so his name lives on. So having a good testimony. So if I'm going to succeed in a longevity way beyond my life, then I need to make sure my testimony during my life is a good testimony. So that's number one. Here's a second thing, another way that our success can outlive us. We should seek to succeed by loving people, investing in people, loving people, taking care of people, because that's what people are going to usually remember. So that's a way of outliving us. There's like a little pebble here I keep stepping on. I feel like I'm out in the parking lot walking on rocks, and that little pebble there underneath my foot. And then here's a third one. Again, this is not in any way conclusive, just a kind of prod your thinking. Here's a third, and that would be this. We should seek to succeed in laying up treasures in heaven. Now here's what I mean by this. If I can do something on earth that has eternal consequence in heaven, would it not then also have a long-term consequence on earth? It would make sense to me. Well, how can I lay up treasures in heaven? Well, obviously, investing in God's work. Okay? Now, after I'm gone, hopefully God's work endures, and so it's still here to still be a blessing. Winning souls. Well, after I'm gone, those people can win people who can win people. So, in different ways like that, our success can outlive us, can go beyond us. That's the success we're looking for. Not just a short term, I enjoy it, it's good for me, and then it's gone, but something that lasts beyond my life. Now let's just turn the dial a little bit and look at it slightly different. And that is this way. In addition, we should seek to succeed in a way that our success will last beyond us. I know it sounds like I'm saying the same thing, but I'm saying it a little different here. Let me see if I can explain. Whatever I'm doing right now, I want this to last long. Okay, I don't mean the particular Bible study right now. You're like, no, you have a certain time, you got to be done tonight. Okay, I don't mean this Bible study. I'm talking about my life itself, the things I'm doing for the Lord, the things I'm investing in. I want those things to continue. It would be a shame that if I were to drop, let's say I drop dead right now, fall over, and everyone's like, okay, well, let's just lock the door. I guess we'll go start some church somewhere else. This one's over. You'd be like, just drag me out, throw me in the weeds. Someone else can keep on preaching. It doesn't have to end just because and that would be my heart's desire that things would continue beyond my own tenure here as the pastor. And so we want things to last beyond us, not just in a generic way, but the specific thing that I'm doing. Now, we're going to drill it down a little bit deeper here in a second. But to start with, on the surface, I want my success, to whatever degree it is, to last beyond me. So our success then should be based on, watch this, on principles and not personality. Often things don't last beyond us if it's all about us. Grace Baptist Church is not built on the personality of Dennis White. And everyone says, man, that was we dodged that bullet. Wow, man, that was... I was a little worried about that one. Okay, that's not what it's built on. It's built on hopefully, if not, I have failed miserably in 12 years. So it should be built on principles of God's Word. The things we're doing based on what the Bible tells us to do, the Lord tells us to do in the Bible. So our success should be based on principles, not personality. And here's the reason. Personalities change, even in a lifetime. Principles don't. Now, let me give you a little bit I'm going to drill down, make it a little bit more specific to each of us. Every organization, every person, okay, whatever you're doing, whatever your world is, your involvement, family, business, whatever, ministry, whatever you look at your life, that involvement, whatever you're involved in. Every organization, whether it's one person or 1,000 people, needs to be built, now think about this, with the expectation of losing its leader, but still succeeding. That's how it should be built. Nothing should be built with, well, when the top guy's gone and everything falls apart. It should be the top guy moves off, someone else moves up, and things keep on going. There might be a hiccup or two. That can be understood, but things should still go forward. That should be, if you're the guy in charge, that should be your desire. Your desire shouldn't be, well, I hope it all falls apart, because then I'll know really how important I am. No, they really know what kind of failure you were, because you didn't prepare it for beyond you. So every organization should be built with the expectation of losing its leader but still succeeding. So the job of the leader, and think about this, the job of the leader, whatever you're leading, whether you're leading a Sunday school class or you're leading a Fortune 500 company, the job of the leader is to plan and prepare for his eventual absence. So whatever you are doing, whatever your job entails, you need to organize it. Now, we don't think this way because it kind of goes against the grain. But this is a good way. This is a wise way of looking at it. We need to organize our job so that we're replaceable. No, I don't want them to replace me. Well, I'm not saying, okay, I'm not encouraging you to be replaced. But eventually, you're going to be replaced. That's true about all of us. We all eventually are going to, whether it's death or however, I guess if it's the rapture, we don't really care what happens after that, but if it's our death and we're gone, or even if maybe it's not death, maybe the Lord moves one person from one spot to another spot. That sometimes happens. Oh, I'm here the rest of my life. And tomorrow the Lord says, you're over there now. Just sometimes it happens. That's maybe not what you planned, but sometimes it's what happens. And so you have to organize your job so that you are replaceable. That involves a Sunday school teacher. And ideally, if I had a Sunday school class, and this Sunday was my last Sunday, then the next Sunday someone should be able to come in and be able to continue what I'm doing. The lessons are prepared, or at least they're organized. It's there. They don't have to kind of like, where's the lessons at? The room should be ready. The supplies should be there. It should be all set up so the next person can fall right in your in place and keep on going. That's, if you're really concerned about your class, that's how you plan it. If I'm not here, those kids are important. They still need someone to teach them. Bus captains is that way. When we were a bus captain on our routes, the whole idea was this, that if you're no longer the bus captain, somebody should be able to take your, back then we used clipboards, take your clipboard, visit all your people, and continue that bus route without you. Junior church, everything you think of. PA, any example, any area you're involved in, it should be able to continue. You should set it up so the next person can fall right, sit right in your seat, stand right in your place, and continue on. Let me give you this little caveat. Those who prepare to be replaced, because that kind of goes against the grain, but now listen. Those who prepare to be replaced are typically those who seem to be irreplaceable, because they're taking their job seriously. They're really concerned about it. That's what makes you irreplaceable, because not many people prepare to be replaced. Let me give you one more statement and move on to the last lesson. Those who prepare for the replacement are seeking to build something bigger than themselves. That's the key. It's bigger than you. It has to continue beyond you. You see the importance of it. If that's not your mindset, you don't see really how important what you're doing, or maybe what you're doing isn't that important. Wisdom realizes that true success can outlive us. Here's the fourth lesson. Number four is this. Wisdom considers that one danger of success, and maybe the biggest danger, is an uncontrolled tongue. That may strike you as a weird fourth lesson. But it's amazing how many times we read here in Proverbs 10 and throughout Proverbs, throughout the Bible, how that all our efforts can be wasted and wiped out just because we can't shut up. Look at chapter 10, look at verse 6. Blessings are upon the head of the just, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Go down to verse 11. The mouth of a righteous man is a well of life, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. No matter how you slice or dice it, it comes back to that statement, doesn't it? Look at verse 13. In the lips of him that hath understanding, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. And it's, and the contrast would be in the lips there, whether you have lips of understanding or the lack of the lips of understanding. Verse 14, wise men lay up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. And look at verse number 19. In the multitude of words, there wanteth not, or there lacks not sin. But he that refraineth his lips is wise. Verse 31, the mouth of the just bringeth forth wisdom, but the froward tongue shall be cut out. And maybe once it's cut out, maybe they'll be wise. The lips of the righteous knoweth what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked speaketh frowardness. So wisdom considers that this thing here can, all that hard work, all that focus can be wiped out just because I can't stop talking. So maybe the greatest effort that is needed to succeed is the effort in controlling what we say. Now, you think, well, I don't know about that. Can I tell you, much of what we see in the news about people ruining their lives are from stupid things they say. Now, they go beyond saying things, and that gets like Harvey Weinstein, but usually it starts with the saying of things. Or the little slurs, or really, what's the word I want? What? Double entendres. Yeah, those little things come back, and next thing you know, now you're the next guy on the news in the Me Too movement, which is not where you want to be. So maybe the greatest effort needed to succeed is the effort in controlling what we say. Now think about this statement. This is, I think, a statement worth considering. A few minutes of wrong words can waste many hours a strenuous labor. Most people who are in construction will tell you this. When the inspector shows up, here's what you say. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It doesn't matter what he says to you. It doesn't matter how stupid it is. You say, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then he leaves. Then you can yell and scream about how dumb he is. But you never say it to his face, because what's going to happen is this. You're going to have a whole lot more problems. If you say, are you stupid? He said, well, wait a minute. You're right. I didn't check well enough. Let me check better, because there's probably some more things I can find. And so a few minutes of wrong words can waste many hours of strenuous labor. Also, think about this. Now, this again, we turn the dial a little bit, look at it slightly different. Here's one more way to look at it. Also, a lot of time is wasted in talking that could be used productively and actually working. Have you ever seen that? The classic thing. I've seen this. One guy is working, trying to work. Two or three other guys are talking to him. Now, there's room for these guys to work, but they're not working. And they're talking to the guy who's working who can't work effectively because he's talking to the people who aren't working. It's like, you know, if you're not going to help him, quit bothering him at least. Let him work by himself. It's better than slowing him down. So our own success may be jeopardized by talkers who masquerade as workers. And so we've got to be careful about this tongue. This tongue can rob us of success in many ways. You know, we did this. Our district manager, I think, came in when this is another Long John's story. He told us, either they found this survey or they did the survey or something, but they said that they found out that for every bad customer experience, you lost an additional three other customers that this person would influence. So you're not just losing this person, you're losing the other three people that they're going to tell. So when someone comes in and they're complaining about, we had a person come in. How many have ever eaten at Long John Silver's? Okay, we call these God's people. All right, so you have fish. Just kidding. You have fish and chicken that basically looks the same, kind of tastes the same too. Same batter, same grease, same everything else. But it's fish versus chicken. And if you look at it, sometimes the way it's cut, especially the way we cut the fish, it kind of, and the chicken sometimes a little bit bigger, and it kind of looks the same. So someone came in and they ordered. Packaged different. But anyways, they bought this bigger bulk size of, I think it was fish. So it's supposed to be eight pieces of chicken. I can't remember now. But anyways, they ordered we'll just say it's fish. So they ordered 8 pieces of fish. I put 8 pieces of fish in the box. Someone did. I don't think I'm the one that did it, because I kind of walked in on this. And they came through the drive-thru. They got it. They came back and they said, I ordered fish and you gave me chicken. And they just threw it down and food went everywhere. And the manager said, well, I'm sorry you didn't get what you wanted. So put eight pieces of fish in the box, gave it to them. They wanted 8 pieces of fish. So we picked up what they threw down. Guess what it was? 8 pieces of fish. It was what they ordered. It was their fault, their stupidity. So why didn't you just go out in the parking lot and beat them up? Well, number one, it's illegal. Number two, he's bigger than me. I don't try to fight people bigger than me. I try not to do that. But anyways, it would. You don't argue with them. You don't say, oh, what are you, stupid? Don't you, here, take a bite. I'll take a bite. We'll prove it. You don't argue. You just give them the fish. Just give them the fish. Okay? Because those few words you say in anger is going to have a lot more hurt than you can imagine. So let's go to our conclusion now. True success is the success that comes from a life that is seeking to honor God. That success can be both spiritually and physically. We're sometimes think of it only one way or the other, but it can be both. It can be in both areas of your life. It can be in a ministry, or it could be in a job situation. So regardless then, if we're speaking about success in a church ministry or a secular job, the principles are the same. So all these work either way. So here's your last statement. Then, true success that honors God will require hard work. But it will be satisfying, and it will outlive us. And that's the key. That's the success that the Lord wants us to seek after. Don't run from the work. Don't be afraid, because it's going to be a lot of effort. Be willing to put it in, because we know that's what's going to be satisfying in the long run, and that's what's going to outlive us.